I'm not sure I can forgive this episode for this particular pun of a title.
It is very punny.
It's a little Chianti and fava beans.
It's fitting though, or maybe that's fitting. Just me. I don't know.
It works.
Yeah,
I like it. Bone to be glad. Okay.
Are we ready to go?
And scene.
Hi, friends.
Hello, Poppets.
Howdy, y'all.
And welcome to Muppet Sex and Trauma. I'm Sara Ezat, maker of the Costume Codex videos on YouTube.
I'm Jack Cram, editor / right-hand man for Passion of the Nerd and editor for Chipperish Media.
And I'm Josh Gosden, a plastic bag drifting in the wind.
And that's enough. And we're here today to talk about Bone to be Wild, which is an episode of Farscape.
It happened.
Bone to be Wild.
Bone to be Wild was written by David Kemper and Rockne S. O'Bannon. So we've got the series creator and the showrunner working together on writing this. And it's directed by Andrew Prowse, who we've seen 3 times before, doing the premiere, the DNA Mad Scientist, and Rhapsody in Blue. The crew of Moya are hiding in an asteroid field with Moya's baby. The peacekeepers are searching for them, but the baby can't starburst, so they just have to chill, literally. What a perfect time to receive a distress call.
Distress call. Directed at us.
How stupid is that?
A pale, bony alien girl is begging for help. Even in a crisis, Crichton can't resist being a bit of a hero. Besides, they might have star charts. And boy, do they need a map out of this place. As they mount up to leave, Pilot asks Aaron to stay. He needs her help. And so the crew split up. Aaron stays with Pilot along with Rigel and Shiana.
Dargo, John, and Zahn head off to help their girl.
Meanwhile, on the command carrier, Krace is trying to conduct a search while Scorpius questions his every move.
Landing on the asteroid, the away crew find a lush jungle. Zahn is in heaven, and Dargo not so much.
Zahn, let me explain to you what's going on inside my nose right now.
They find the alien girl who says her name is Emily. She says there's a terrible monster and they must leave now. Sounds like a good plan, but when they get back to the transport pod, they find a big scary creature, an injured Dargo, and the pod is damaged.
On Moya, Pilot tells Aaron,
the offspring knows he is different. There is tension between Moya and him.
There may be no one who can understand what he's going through except an ex-peacekeeper. Pilot asks if she will board him and help. Moya has consented.
But does the baby?
Things are getting worse for Krace. His search is fruitless. Scorpius keeps reminding him of his disobedience and failures.
Do you forget that I have seen your memories?
And now his second-in-command is deferring to Scorpius.
Zahn is tending to Dargo's wounds when Emily notices that she is different from the others, and Zahn says that yes, her species evolved from plants. John is fascinated.
That's why you like the light so much, photosynthesis.
They go out to find more healing plants when Emily says the creature is coming and gets out of there. John follows to check on her. There is some confusion, and it seems like the creature got Zahn. Emily says she knows where the creature will go, and she can take John there. Upon arrival, John finds there's a surprise waiting for him. Emily is the one who wants to do the eating of his bones. Luckily, the creature scares her off.
Back with Moya, Aaron is boarding the young ship. She is fascinated, and he responds to her easily.
Hello.
With her help, Moya and the child are able to communicate.
John is taken to a lab where he meets the creature, or Bernie, as he likes to be called.
Bernie is a scientist, John.
Bernie tells him the score. Emily is a calcivore, a bone eater. She's the creature. She killed his crew and his mate. Bernie is a botanist, and he is very taken with Zahn. He shows his gadgets to her, including one that can shrink plants. The two of them go off to heal Dargo. When they are gone, Emily shows up. She says Bernie is lying. His people sent hers to this place to kill the animals, and now she is all that's left and is starving. And she begs.
You will provide me access to a more permanent food supply.
You have got to be kidding me, right?
Could things get any worse for Krace? Scorpius has reported him to High Command and has taken command of his ship. He's going to see Krace stripped of everything he's got. In desperation, Krace attacks, and Scorpius effortlessly proves his physical superiority. In command now, Scorpius orders the ship to bombard signals at Moya's offspring.
The young ship is confused. The Peacekeeper's signals feel familiar. Aaron tells him that yes, they feel familiar, but you can't trust them. You must trust your mother. Stay hidden. Rigel wonders if they can use the ship's guns for defense, but Aaron is feeling protective and refuses.
Zahn is just finishing Dargo's healing when John arrives and confronts Bernie. He accuses him of cruelty to Emily's people, all for some stinking plants. A sentiment that hurts Zahn.
How animal-centric of you, John.
She leaves with Bernie, who says he has a star chart in his lab. John goes looking for them and finds a hurt Bernie, who claims Emily attacked him and took Zahn. But Emily is really at the pod where Dargo is telling her about the command carrier. There's plenty of lovely bones there.
I will control my urge.
John has just remembered where there are no bones. In Zahn. He goes back to the lab to confront Bernie, who had tried to use his plant shrinker on Zahn. There is a kerfuffle and Bernie is killed by his own gadget, leaving bones to tide Emily over until the carrier arrives.
Bon appetit.
With everyone back aboard Moya, Pilot tells Aaron how grateful Moya is for her help and asks,
if you, Aaronson, were the one to choose his name.
I like this one. This one was great. There was so much going on. I thought this week we were going to get like a filler episode. They were going to like give the plot a rest and we go into some filler. And I'm glad they didn't do that.
I also had fun with this one. I feel like there was a lot going on, and especially with the plant plot, it was difficult to keep track of kind of who was doing what.
And
of the three, that was probably my least favorite plot line, but I really enjoyed the Scorpius and the Krace stuff. And oh god, I just melted with Aaron. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
I always remember this one as less good than it is, because I always think about the A plot, the plant plot, and that it's kind of messy.
It's not a well plotted plant.
No, it's not. This is not how you plot a plant plot.
I am finding this show often feels like it has to have a lot going on in one episode. Like, I would love for it to just slow down. And I think it has from time to time, but I've noticed a bit of a pattern where there seems to be like two or three storylines going on. And they're not just like, they're pretty like complicated storylines too, or there's just a lot to them rather than just a funny B plot or something.
Yeah, sometimes there is a lot. Yeah.
And there, you know, sometimes they do a really good job of like thematically tying all the plots together. And there was a little bit of that here, a little bit of like, who do you trust? Who do you believe? And, you know, common in all three, but the way that poor Crichton was getting ping pong back and forth between Bernie the botanist and Emily the eater was a challenge.
Yeah.
To follow from a story perspective.
Yeah. That's the one it's not a well plotted plant plot.
Say that three times.
Right. So which of these, do we start with the plant plot or do we start with the, plotting, peacekeepers or the, Aaron mothering a new ship? Where do you guys want to start?
Well, Madam MC, I think it's your choice.
Okay, well, let's maybe let's start with the plant plot then. It's supposed to be the A plot of the episode, but it is. It's definitely the least good. A couple interesting things about this. They had this idea and also this creature design, Bernie, from the beginning. And they couldn't quite figure out where they wanted to slot this in. Because you can't not use that design. Like the two mouths and everything. It's just awesome.
Oh, yeah. I love Bernie's design. He sort of reminded me of something like the Power Rangers would fight or something, and that's a good thing. I mean, that is a complete compliment.
And then the other interesting thing about this episode is this is the first appearance of Francesca Buehler, who is actually Ben Browder's wife. We're going to see her. You're going to get used to this voice, although she is an amazing chameleon because it is spot Francesca. Because she comes up in, she is the one in, she's Emily, and she's going to be a variety of creatures.
Oh, okay.
And, of creatures and characters through the series. Because why not? If your husband is right there and has a cool show, and you're an actor who can melt into any role and has a lot of interesting voices, why not go for it? So yeah, we'll see when we get her back if you guys can spot that. Francesca.
Well, I want to give a special mention to her performance because, especially in the scenes where she's doing that hungry rage berserker thing, like, that is genuinely terrifying. Like, I was genuinely scared in those scenes. Like, there's this sense of, like, urgency and creepy, like, stay the hell away from me vibes. Like, she went for it, man. It was awesome.
She is good.
The creature designs were far and away the best parts of the plant plot. Both Bernie and Emily, like, holy crap. When she started to werewolf out behind John the first time. And she was kind of like out of focus, and like you could just barely tell, like, wait a minute, are her spines moving? Like, that was so effective. And every time she hulked out, and like when it came out of her headphone ears or whatever, and it was just so good. But her actress did a really good job also, just being this like weird femme fatale werewolf.
Yeah. It reminded me of this vampire movie from the early 90s. I can't remember the name of, but the vampires in this film, they almost went into like a frenzy rather than, you know, like controlled sort of, as we've seen like Dracula and stuff. They would just completely flip out. I wish I could remember the name. But yeah, I loved, there was something very pretty about her design as well, Emily. Like the bubbles around her head. And I liked how when she was raging out, they went all red. Like that was really, really cool.
Yeah, I love a transforming monster, especially practical effect transforming monster. That is just cool. And like they are both monsters.
Yeah.
And they are both victims. And that's just kind of a neat thing, even though the way of it is confusing. We have more.
Oh no, I was just gonna say though, of the two designs, Bernie was my favorite though. It was really, there was just so much going on in that design, I could stare at him for hours.
Yeah, I think he's my favorite season one design, you know, after Scorpius.
He's pretty great.
Favorite one off, because that is just, it's cool. He's like, he's like he reminds me of the trash lady from the Fraggle Rock, but mixed with like the lady from, with the chairs and the stuff on her back from Labyrinth. Only a Henson production would, make a creature like that.
It was, so the plot wise, it was a little frustrating the way that, like, the characters were getting ping pong back and forth between Bernie and Emily. And it was always with this, but wait, you don't know the truth. And like, somebody said that like three times in this episode.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I caught myself almost kind of like going, all right. Like, why don't we all just sit down and talk it through?
Yeah. Yeah.
I felt like that plot, it dragged a little bit, and it was very, how do I explain this? It dragged, and it just felt like it was a really, really great idea that could have been executed a little better, I think.
Yeah, that's the way we're framing it.
Plus, we get Zahn damseled twice.
Yeah.
You know, they think she's damseled, and then she's actually damseled, So we got the reveal finally. I've known all along, as did the writers when they were writing this, that Zahn is a plant.
I was like, cool, but okay. Like, I don't know. It just, it felt like a retcon in a way. It's like, oh, by the way, she's a plant. And I don't know. I sound like I'm shitting on it. I'm not, but it just, I don't know. Something about it just felt weird, but cool. I don't know. Josh?
I appreciated it. I liked the reveal. I liked kind of the recontextualizing of a lot of her stuff, but it also really puts a lot of her previous scenes. It makes me go, huh? Like when she's taking somebody's pain, or when she was at the trippy hippie commune, and there was like an actual tree that they were all like worshiping.
Oh,
like it's all. I'd like to go rewatch most of season one, knowing that Zahn is a plant.
There's also, I can't remember what episode, but that there was that scene where she gets all like turned on and sexy by the sunlight or something, right? Yeah, so that makes a lot of sense.
That's probably the thing that makes the most sense. Mm-hmm. Now knowing that she is a plant and she likes to be in the sunlight.
Yeah, I like the idea that she can go invisible. I think that's cool, and I'd like to see them use that in the future. I think that'd be really cool.
I feel like that could have been really helpful in any number of previous episodes. So yeah, that was actually my least favorite reveal in this episode was, oh, cool, Zahn can turn invisible now.
That seems nice.
Yeah.
It makes me not want to think too much about what we've already seen, just in case.
I need to start keeping like a running notebook of Zahn's superpowers.
Yeah.
Which so far, most of them have only shown up once.
Yeah. Mm.
I think the only one that has like significantly recurred is her wide-eyed pain sharingness.
So there's that point too where Bernie he shrinks Zahn and he's going to keep Kimber as a specimen. As someone who collects action figures and stuff, I kind of want like a Zahn in a little glass thing for my collection. Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
There are Zahn action figures.
Oh, okay.
I don't think any of them are in little plant thingies, but...
I can make one.
I definitely thought that the shrink ray was cool. I didn't realize it was a shrink ray at first. I thought it was like some kind of like a growth ray or something. Mm. But I thought that was pretty cool. And then I just sort of chuckled my way through the episode every time they mentioned Bernie's name, because like, oh, Bernie, what a guy. Great guy, Bernie. Yeah.
Yes, so alien. Bernie and Emily. Emily and Bernie.
Emily and Bernie. That's what I kept calling them, Emily and Bernie.
Well, I mean, it's Bernie, but it's Bernie, and like he's the most Australian man ever.
yeah, like he is more Aussie than I am, and he's technically never been to Australia, so yeah. I know we typically keep theme for last, but like I was wondering if there was like some sort of environmental theme going on there. If they were trying to make some sort of statement on the environment and how we've introduced like one species into an ecosystem to take care of a pest, but then that species takes over and then becomes the pest. It made me think of over here in Australia, particularly up in north, up in Queensland and places like that. At some point in history, we had a problem with cane beetles. They were damaging sugarcane crops and stuff. So they introduced the cane toad to take care of the cane beetles, which they did, but now that area is overrun with cane toads. They're freaking everywhere. So, yeah, I was wondering if they were making some sort of statement there. I don't know.
I don't know how clear the statement was. I think there were ideas in there. You know, the things that scientists do.
Excuse me. Yeah, there was definitely some, like, refutation of utilitarianism there towards the end, especially of, like, you know, when Bernie had the gun, he was like, think of, you know, Two-Face, like, think of all the diseases we could possibly cure or whatever. And he's like, isn't that a fair trade-off? And John's like, not for her. Zap. Yeah. You know, isn't it worth devastating a local ecosystem or a local economy in some third world country if the first world can reap benefits from it, kind of perspective that I was picking up there. But yeah, I think I agree with what you're saying, sorry. It was a little hard to follow.
Yeah, it's a bit half-baked.
Yeah.
It's there, but it's, I don't know that it's making a clear, any kind of clear statement.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the only one I could think of was, like, invasive species and whatnot. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I didn't really catch any, like, theme connecting the different stories going on, but I could be totally wrong there. I don't know.
I picked up an idea, but I don't know if it was I don't know if we'd call it a theme, especially as it wasn't terribly well-developed, half-baked.
Yeah.
There's a lot of moving pieces on the board in this episode.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, shall we talk about the command carrier and our shifting antagonists?
I'm not sure if this is my favorite story in the episode or whether it's Aaron and the baby. I don't know, but there's some really good stuff going on here. I love how every scene between Krace and Scorpius, it feels like this vice grip that's slowly tightening and tightening and tightening until there's just a big explosion and they fight. Like, it's so good.
Mm-hmm. Man, it was just so well done, you know. And I like the contrast. Like, the characters have been so afraid of Krace this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And as Scorpius rightly points out, Krace ain't done all that much.
Yeah.
And he ain't done all that much well. And mm-hmm. so far, the characters don't have that great of awareness of Scorpius, least of all to be afraid of him. Like, as far as they know, Scorpius is still back on that lab. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And so it's doing a really good job of, for the audience, doing a really good job, I feel like, of, like, demonstrating his villainy, for want of a better word.
Yeah.
So the minion that we see Krace and Scorpius interacting with is actually going to stick around for a little bit.
Rocka?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think they gave his name yet.
I thought I heard him called, or maybe I just read the subtitles, but I thought it was Rocka.
Darn, because what we were discussing in the Discord, what to do with the fact that we probably wouldn't get his name for a while. We're going to have you guys make one up.
But
I guess the subtitles or something spoiled it. But yeah, his name is Rocka.
Okay.
He's going to be around for a little bit anyway.
It was a little hard to tell if this was like a reveal or what, but towards the very end of the episode, when Broccoli comes in and it's just that gorgeous shot of Krace in through the doorway. And like you said, Jack, like, everything's just closing in around him. And so, like, they never actually enter his quarters, and he's just sitting at his desk, just totally despondent. And Rocka seems to be, like, trying to buck him up, or at the very least get him to, like, step up, which yeah. t- to me, doesn't quite fit with the story that Scorpius was telling earlier in the episode of, like, you know, I've had them, you know, I'll tell them not to do it, and I'll tell them, like, Scorpius made it seem like the crew was already behind him, and Braca made it seem like they weren't quite yet. They were just waiting for Kreese to step up.
Mm.
And then Braca says something like, is it true that Scorpius has the ability to, like, know your fears and weaknesses and prey on them? And I was like, is that what he was doing this whole episode? Like, how much of the interaction between Scorpius and Kreese was actually quote unquote real? Mm. That was what I was left wondering at the end of the episode.
Well, yeah, watching their, like, back and forth, it's almost like they have, like, sort of an uneasy truce, even though they kind of, like, Scorpius gives Kreese a thinly veiled threat at some point. It's more like they hate each other, but they can't do anything about it currently, obviously, until Scorpius decides to essentially stage a mutiny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see two animals sort of trying to establish dominance. And we know that sort of the peacekeepers are all about strength. So I think they're like, are you going to show us that you're stronger than him? Mm. Okay, you're not going to show us you're stronger than him.
Yeah. And I love that when they do start fighting, Scorpius, man, he just hulks out. He hulks out. And then once he subdues him, he returns to this really cold and calculated tone. And it gave me chills. I was like, oh, wow, this guy, you don't mess with this guy. Holy shit. Yeah.
Why must really you force me to show you my physical superiority?
Yeah.
That was fucked.
Yeah.
They're doing a really good job ramping this character up, man.
Yeah. And I sort of felt sorry for Kreese in a way, even though he's the bad guy. But yeah, I still think we're going to get this turn where Kreese is going to step away from the dark side and come to the good, step into the light. I swear it's going to happen. That's my prediction. Okay,
we marked that down as Jack's prediction is redemption arc for Kreese.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely. I'd be willing to put money on it because he's slowly getting pushed out into the peacekeepers, and that's kind of what happened with Aaron, sort of.
Do you have any thoughts, Josh, on where Kreese might be going?
I think Scorpius Brothers is going to kill him. Like at a certain point, he's just going to die. Yeah.
If you were the writer, would you do that?
I'll tell you what. If I were the writer, I would... Well, I would have already brought back Maldus, but I would have. No, if I were the writer, I would have Kreese double down on trying to subvert Scorpius, and like, I didn't get to be captain of a command carrier and a peacekeeper for all my good looks or something like that. Like, he's actually more clever when he actually gets a chance to detach and pause and think things through, which he hasn't been able to do this entire time, you know. And the mutiny actually gives him, like, some distance from his vengeance quest.
Mm.
Well, he will be in the next episode.
Well, no shit. It's the season finale.
Oh, yeah, we're coming up to the finale, of course. Yeah. I mean, if they don't do that, I'm going to be like, what the
spoilers.
Fuck?
He will be in the next episode.
No. Oh, my God. Can you imagine if they finish this season without doing something there? I would be so mad. I would be so, so mad.
Yeah, they actually, even when filming the final episode, they still didn't know if they would get... another season. So what we will see next time we meet is what they thought might be the final episode of Farscape ever.
Okay.
Which luckily it wasn't. But, you know. So, yes, it is interesting watching the two alphas attempt to snarl at each other and see...
Yeah.
Who comes out on top?
Yeah,
not that it's like not that that's how actual wolves alphas behave. It's more like gorillas, but you know.
Yeah, yeah, gorillas or like tigers fighting over a pride or something.
Yeah. So anything else you want to say about that section of the episode?
I just loved it. I thought it was really, really good, really, really well done, well written, well acted. It was wonderful. Loved it.
God, that last shot of Grace as the door closes and all you see is like him through the little circular port. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, I really love, we get a lot of good set dressing and design work in this episode on the command carrier. Like across this episode, we get great design work, but I like the on the command carrier, you know, and we have we see some of his trophies, don't we? In this one, and you know, the setup for the dining hall, it's all about we got all that red and black, and we got all this like, look at the power, which is actually like paper thin. Mm-hmm. All this display of power. There is weapon power there, but actually, because it's such a hierarchical thing, if you get knocked off your place, like it's actually incredibly insecure, mm-hmm. You know, place to be.
Mm. When it requires fear and manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
All it takes is somebody more fearful.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not actual power. That's force, essentially.
Yeah.
And talking about force and incredible design work, the baby.
We'll
get a name next episode.
I'm so happy that they didn't waste any time getting into this, because as I said at the beginning of the recording, I thought this was just going to be a filler episode and we're going to have to wait. I loved it. It got straight into it. I love the idea that the baby is half Leviathan and half peacekeepership, and that means Aaron is the perfect person to go and commune with the baby and talk to the baby, because she's essentially the same thing, kind of. She's trying to step away from being a peacekeeper, but she's also grappling with what that means and what her past means when it comes to her present. And I just love it. Love it.
Yeah, it was so good. So the set design was interesting because it was the same color scheme as like the peacekeeper carrier, but set on top of the production design of Moya. You know, it wasn't the same set, obviously, that's not what I mean, but like the production design of the baby's command center, command deck room, mm-hmm. was very organic and things grew out of each other, but it was all just bathed under red and black instead of those warm earth tones like on Moya. Mm-hmm. So it was some really effective visual imagery there.
Yeah.
I really appreciated it.
And the sound and light design as a way to sort of have him communicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Josh, I think you said last time that you were wondering if Aaron's pilot DNA was going to come into play with the baby. I think you said that, right? Or sorry, maybe it was you. One of you said it. And I thought that's what they were going for. But it turns out, no, they weren't. But that would have been really, really cool if that's the way it was going.
Well, I thought that's what they were going for, and I thought maybe they were hinting that that's what they were getting, because she, at a certain point, she was just walking around, and she was like, communications. And I went,
yeah.
And so I was wondering if maybe that was because she was able to, even if she's not necessarily aware of it, like interface and communicate better with the kid mm-hmm. than anybody else might have been able to.
Yeah.
I think we can say it's there, even if they didn't talk about it. You know, mm-hmm. there's more than one reason why Aaron is the right person to be communicating with him right then.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, philosophically as well as biologically.
Yeah, yeah. I love the idea of the former peacekeeper who's, you know, breaking the conditioning, cat counseling this ship who's struggling with its own identity. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So
she was so gentle with it. And when she was like,
Yeah.
You can trust the people around you. Like, she was talking about herself, and I was just like, oh God, Aaron, you've done so good. You've come so far.
And she won't let him be used in the battle that he wasn't part of. That's such an interesting moment.
That bit was interesting because, Aaron says, I'm not going to, we're not going to drag the baby into a conflict not of its doing. And then I think Rigel says, like we have a choice or something like that. And I think I agree with Rigel there. I mean, I understand what Aaron's saying, but if the shit hits the fan, something's going to be done, you know?
Well, if the shit hits the fan, I'm sure that the baby will defend itself and its mother. But I think what Rigel and Chiana were initially proposing was a preemptive strike. They were proposing, let's use the kid to blast our way out of here.
Mm-hmm.
Is that even a practical option? We don't know.
We don't
know. Right. Right. Yeah. Also love... Pilot says the offspring knows he's different. There is tension between Moya and him. So the baby skipped infancy and childhood and went straight for pissed off rebellious teenager, essentially.
I don't know if it's teenager, but like because
I'm kidding.
I think Moya's always been coded more animal in some ways than person. So, you know, a giraffe starts walking not long after it's born. You know?
Yeah.
So I think she's sort of, the Leviathans are sort of somewhere between animal and person because they do communicate, but they, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. He's definitely got a personality already.
Yeah, I felt that too. I'm like, this is already developing into an actual character. And I also like the fact that now the crew with the baby has a means of defending themselves, essentially. That's pretty cool. And yeah, I like that we got to see the inside of the baby, the interior. I'm just glad that they gave us this now and didn't make us wait. I'm so glad.
It was really
any
good.
Predictions on what the name might be?
I don't know in this show. I have no idea. Barry.
Something peacekeeper or something, I'm sure.
Oh, come on. Make some silly guesses. Join the spirit.
Marvin. I'm trying to think something that sounds like Moya. Marvin.
Something Sebastian. Aaron's gonna, because that final shot, man, of Aaron, Claudia Black squeezed out that tear.
She looks so happy and proud. And
come on,
it was
beautiful.
You won't
play the game, will you? Come up with something ridiculous to get.
I know
she's gonna come up with something that's gonna break my heart.
I don't think it's going to be an Earth word, you know. I don't think it's going to be a name that we are familiar with. I think it's going to mean something to Sebastians or Leviathans. I don't know. I love the B and C plot so much more than I like the A plot. The A plot's just like whatever, like cool. Yeah. There's some scary, cool, creepy parts, and there's some interesting ideas, but this other stuff is so much better.
I think the problem with the A-plot is also that it's really hard to follow who's where, what's going on, where's on. You know, and like, because we've got two locations that look that seem kind of similar, that they're bouncing back and forth from, and they don't really establish where either is.
Yeah, they
did a really good job with the geography in this episode.
Yeah, and I could have done without the whole the good guys really the bad guy trope. That was just extra conflict that didn't really have to be there. I don't know. It
kind of boiled down to, like you were saying earlier, it kind of boiled down to the lesser of two evils, you know, because like on the one hand, sure, Emily was eating people, but also like it was for her, it was her or them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Either I consume sustenance or I die.
And like a girl's got to eat, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's dark to think she ate her family.
Yeah. Mm. And then on the other hand, you've got Bernie Mac over here. Like, Bernie the botanist is knowingly manipulating events and people for his own selfish ends.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's the lesser of two. I feel like Emily is the lesser of two evils versus Bernie.
Interesting. Interesting.
Like it, one is almost instinctual and based on survival, and the other one is like greed.
Ah, see, I saw it as the other way around, but you've totally convinced me there. I didn't think of it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, Bernie was the one who chose to attack Zan. He had other options.
He was also the one who withheld information that would have made them sympathetic towards Emily.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think the writing kind of makes our people feel a little bit stupid.
Thank you.
Because they're just like, they're like, this guy hasn't told you the whole truth. Okay, so I will trust you completely.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't tell you the whole truth. Okay, I will trust you completely. It's like, no. They are both serving an agenda. Don't trust either of them. They are both shady as fuck.
Yeah. The more I think about it, the more half-baked it seems. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
I didn't hate it.
I think this is one of those plots that, like, diminishes as you watch it over and over, because you're just I've watched why Theon John just looks like an idiot running back and forth.
Yeah. It's like that we're trying to do, like, Farscape the Last Rainforest or something, you know, and it just didn't quite work.
Farscape Gully.
Like, I can see
Farscape Gully.
They had neat ideas. They had neat design ideas.
Yeah.
They wanted to do something with Emily, and they got like a hell of an actor to embody her. But the mechanics of the plot just didn't knit together.
They ticked all of the boxes, but then they took the pie out into the oven too early, and the pastry was a little soggy. Like,
having just finished watching season two of Picard, I'm very forgiving for people sort of, where did the structure go?
No spoilers. I haven't seen it yet.
No, I won't spoil it for you. But
it was no Jeremiah Crichton by any means.
Like, no, it was. No,
it
was.
It wasn't. I still enjoyed it. It just everything else in the episode outshined it.
It's one of those. It's a cookie dough episode where there are good bits, but it hasn't finished baking. Mm-hmm. But then it's surrounded by I don't know, creme brulee or something that's been done perfectly with the other two plots. So it's just kind of like, there is a hole in this.
Right.
And I did like, I liked Dargo's solution of like, look, you got to eat people. We got people who want to kill us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming. Like, one way, the only way for us to get off this planet is to let them know that we're here in the first place. They're coming. So, you know, have at it. And then she goes back to being all femme fatale, you know.
Yeah.
At the end of the episode, and Scorpius thinks he's being the clever one when he's like, sometimes we have to be kind and generous.
Give of ourselves.
Mm-hmm. But yes, you do.
Yeah, and I don't think it's him he's going to be giving of.
I'm sure it's not.
There are plenty of red shirts right there.
Yeah.
Can we talk about Dargo for a second?
Let's talk about my Hambo baby.
So there's that scene. The scene he gets shot, right? And so at first I laughed because the way he says, "I told you this was a measurable place," he sounded like Winston Churchill or something. Like, "I told you this was a measurable place." It cracked me up. I'm like, what? Like, watch it again and listen to
I think it's one of my favorite line deliveries. Not that, but the Zod, let me tell you what's going on in my nose.
So, like, I actually started cackling, but then the scene took on this very serious tone that I wasn't expecting. It's like, you know, Josh, I know, buddy, I know. Just breathe. But so when a main character gets injured, you don't think anything's going to actually happen because they're a main character. But they were playing this scene in like a really serious, dark way. Then I thought, wait, are we going to lose Dargo? What? No. Obviously, it didn't happen. But like, he spits up blood at one point. I'm like, holy shit, this is really serious. Yeah.
So I didn't think
Zod has magic medicine.
Apparently.
Yeah.
I didn't think he got shot. I thought he got punched.
Oh, was it?
I thought Bernie caved his skull in.
I thought he got shot. I don't know.
Something got shot because there was something that was broken in the pod, and yet at the end of the episode, it was still fixed.
Yeah. At this point, I watched it like a week ago, so I don't really remember. He just got hurt. But it says in my notes then he got shot, so I don't know.
He dove at Bernie with his gun sword, and Bernie, like, knocked it out of the way, and the first shot went wild. I feel like I'm the choreographer. Mm-hmm. And the first shot goes wild, and then John tried to shoot, and like in the chaos, his shot goes. He missed, and he hit the wall. I thought Dargo got like sucker punched and had his skull caved in.
There was something
punch.
Yeah, something internal bleeding that something plant fixed.
Yeah. Fulcrum was fractured or some
whatever it is, it fucked him up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, Zahn has these magical herbs and, like, I feel completely healed. Cool, man. Great.
Yeah, and someone healed the pod somehow, too.
Well, John was doing that all throughout the episode with his socket wrench, but...
Right, between running after one monster and the other.
Yeah, while Dargo is just bleeding out on the floor.
Yeah, this and there are good bits and good bits and messy bits. To me Francesca is the highlight, and I'm so glad we're gonna have wait till you see some of the performances that she gives.
She's so good. She's so genuinely creepy. Oh, and I loved that we got to see her on the peacekeeper ship, and Scorpius is hugging her. I'm like, oh, some shit's about to go down. And if we don't get to see at least a little bit of what happens, I'm writing a letter to someone. I'm writing a letter, and it's going to...
Yes, dear yes, 2001.
Yeah, exactly. It just, I was so, I loved that they showed us that. I was like, oh, you're about to go down, man. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Or you're about to lose some red shirts.
Yeah, pretty much, because I know Scorpius won't die. But, I mean, I hope we get to at least know what happened there, because that's, like, I felt scared because he's, like, hugging her. I'm like, dude, she's about to go mental, like, at any moment. Oh, wait, no, she had eaten at that point, I think. So I think she had a little while.
She's had a snack.
She had a Bernie Mac.
There you go. When last you met, you were the student. Now you are the master.
Oh, that tickled me so much.
Well, it is a very punny episode.
So darkly punny episode. This is the most gruesome pun that I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Bone to be wild.
So, do we have anything else to talk about?
Again, touching on theme here, the baby Aaron subplot. I think there was this really strong theme to me that we're not beholden to the circumstances of our births or our heritage. We can choose to forge our own paths and forge a better path regardless of our circumstances. We are more than the sum of our parts.
I think that is the theme of Aaron.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the theme of Aaron in general. That's definitely true for the baby, and in some ways it links the baby directly to Emily, because ultimately that's how they resolve the conflict on the planet, is Emily is like, I can suck it up because I get what's happening. I get it. I get that this is terrible. I can hold it together, but you guys have got to help me out here.
Right.
And so she goes against her basic nature, which is the question that Aaron and the baby chip were wrestling with.
Yeah, they both appear to be in positions where they don't seem to have a choice. Including Kreis.
Right.
But we do see, you know, Emily makes a choice. Bernie does have all the choices in the world, and he chooses to be a Zahn shrinking asshole. But
I'm not gonna lose it again.
But Emily has almost no choices, and she chooses to literally be self-sacrificing.
Like she's risking her health, her life, so that she won't commit any more heinous acts. And then, you know, like you mentioned, Sara, like Kreis is also faced with a similar choice, that, you know, his quest for vengeance by now is such a defining part of his identity that it could probably be called nature. At least within the context of his character in this season. He makes the opposite choice that the baby ship and Emily do. He chooses to go with his nature.
Yeah.
Which is peacekeeper, which is I've been beaten. You know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It was also... Although, go ahead.
I don't think Emily is choosing not to eat them out of... not doing any more heinous acts. I think it is strictly, it is a pragmatic decision. If I eat these people, there will be no more people. If they leave, they will bring other people.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. The other thing that I noticed amongst the three was that there were in each of the plot lines, there were two people or two parties or whatever that somebody had to choose to trust. And with the plant plot, it was Emily versus Bernie. Who do John Zahn and Dargo trust? Kind of off screen in the command carrier, Kreis and Scorpius were those two people, and the crew had to choose who to trust or who to follow at the very least. And then, of course, for the baby ship, it was the peacekeepers or the crew of Moya and his mom. And so kind of, you know, how each of those characters arrived at this is what I was saying earlier. It's kind of like more of an idea than a theme, because the way that it carried out in each of the three plot lines didn't really tie it together. You know, so that John and Zahn and Dargo basically struck a deal with the devil to get them off of the planet, like you were just saying, Sara. And then the command carrier fell in line with Scorpius because they saw him as a stronger alpha. The only one who made like a specific choice was the baby ship. And that was based on like who was offering me kindness and nurturing, you know, because at the very least, the only thing that the baby ship knew about the peacekeepers was that they were sending it confusing signals. And I make up that those confusing signals probably were uncomfortable at the very least, and maybe even have been painful for the baby. Because the whole point was to induce panic, you know. So the baby ship shows nurturing.
I love the deviousness that shows in Scorpius too. Him suggesting that they do that. I'm like, wow, this is one bad motherfucker. Like he's going to hurt a baby to flush out his enemy. Like, dude, you're a piece of shit.
Oh yes, we are going to get to know more about the lengths that Scorpius will go to.
So right now, did I miss it? What is Scorpius's goal right now? Is he after the baby ship? Is he still after John?
He's after the knowledge in John's head.
Okay.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah. The wormhole technology. And Kreis just wants to kill John because he thinks John killed his brother. Even though I think he knows he didn't really, I don't know.
Yeah.
But that kind of bothers me.
Also shown interest in the ship.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Motor check.
Yeah.
Right. So, next episode is called Family Ties.
Ooh.
And do we have any predictions as to how this season is going to wrap things up?
I predict that I'm probably going to tear up at some point. That's my prediction.
That's a given. Trust me, you will. Okay. Do you have any ideas on what might be coming up plot-wise?
Family Ties, you said it's called?
Yes.
I don't know.
No, Michael J. Keaton will not be making an appearance. Michael J. Fox.
Yeah, I knew what you meant.
I went with it, yeah. I didn't think Batman was
going to
show up.
I just kind of
That's my prediction. Batman's going to rock up.
Yeah, just DeLorean. Kind of matched together with the character and the actor.
Yeah.
I
mean, I think obviously we're going to get a final, or not a final, but we're finally going to get a confrontation between the crew of Moya and the command carrier. And I'll be interested to see, so if the writers really thought this might be it, I'll be interested to see if they tried to wrap everything up or if they tried to sucker the network and the audience with a cliffhanger.
Right. Well, if they thought this was going to be their swan song, maybe they would want to do something that would serve as a series finale. I don't know. But Family Ties, Krace's brother was killed and he thinks John did. So maybe we're going to get Krace turning to the light. Maybe. And they're going to become a family and they're going to like hug it out. I don't know.
Your prediction is John and Krace hugging it out?
Yes.
Okay.
Write it down. I said it.
I love it. Let's see if that comes out. If that comes out next time.
You heard it here first, folks. I don't know.
Okay. So yeah, we have some thoughts as to what might be going on. You guys don't you don't like playing the make ridiculous guesses game, do you?
I'm just really bad at I'm really bad at predicting anything, unless it's blatantly obvious. But this, I mean, I'm not very well versed in sci-fi, but typically this show has been pretty subversive in that it's just doing its own thing. It doesn't care what everyone else has done. It's doing its thing. So I don't know.
Okay. Well, we will, in fact, find out in 2 weeks what happens on Family Ties.
Oh, gonna be fun. You guys should join us in 2 weeks.
And I think I need to find the theme song to that show because that's what's in there. my head, to my mind ties? Keeps. Yeah, my mind keeps flashing to. maybe you two are too young for that. But
I know of it, but.
Definitely know what it is.
I know of it, but I never watched it, and I have no idea what the theme is. No idea. I remember the Full House theme.
I remember the Beverly Hills Cop theme.
Ah, okay. This is the what TV themes do you remember? I can see the like the logo and the whole thing in my head.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That was my childhood in the '80s. Family Ties. We do, baby, without us. What would we do, baby, without us? So, what's everyone's favorite bits?
It's going to be the last bit with Aaron with the tear and the it's just so pretty and so nice. I don't know, Aaron and the baby, I just love it. That whole part, I just love it.
Aaron and the baby for me too. Yeah, absolutely. The way like Pilot and Moya, I mean, it's almost like Pilot and Moya asked Aaron to be their god, the kid's godmother. You know? And like that's how the scene is played, and Aaron just like joy just melting off of her face. It just looks so good.
Well, part of me wants to go with Francesca Buller's performance because she is awesome. And I also know how, just how many awesome performances are coming from her. But I think I'm actually going to go with an Aaron and Pilot moment, but not the will you name the baby moment. It's the moment when Pilot tells Aaron that she has Moya's permission to go aboard the baby. And she said, yes, but do I have the babies?
Oh, okay.
There's something about that that says a lot to me about Aaron, that we've come from the compassion, what is compassion woman, to the the way even the mother didn't think about this, but we need to check on the consent of the child, you know, that no, that this is, she's probably like that she's thinking about that without any prompting and without just, you know, just that she has that much empathy for this, the old baby ship. So, yeah, that I just that's just a lovely little moment from Aaron. And I love the way that Claudia performs it.
I hope we get like a buddy cop episode with those two, Aaron and the baby. That'd be great.
No predictions for where things will be going with the baby next season.
I think this stuff on the fly. I have no idea.
I love the idea. Yep. Aaron and baby going doing some buddy cop shenanigans would be a lot of fun.
Yeah. They go into peacekeeper territories.
And... It's like Knight Rider, but in space.
Yeah.
That's great.
Okay, so not a long one today, but that's all right. Where can people find you, Jack?
You can find me on Twitter at lackofsurprise1. That's all one word with a number one at the end. You can find me over on Discord, hanging out in our Discord server. And you can find me over on Instagram. I don't post very much, but I'm at Jack Cram over there. Josh, what about you, sir?
I hang out on Instagram as well, at Josh Gosden, talking about food and self-care mostly.
And I'm sorry, Ezra, you can find me at the Costume Codex on YouTube. I recently, it went out on May 1st, I started a project where I asked friends to make a video about a scene that spoke to them in some way about hope. So you'll find that playlist that... I started with, I think, 7 people launched on the day, on May 1st, and a couple videos have added since then.
You'll see one from yours truly sometime soon.
At some point.
I'm working on it.
And that's kind of a fun project. And you can also find me on Twitter at BlueStockinSara. And yeah. That is where you can find us. And you can also email the podcast at MuppetSexAndTrauma@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at MuppetSexAndT1.
It's all down there. Down there. Go on. Click, click, yep. Click down. Look down there and click it. Click it. Click it.
So join us in 2 weeks for the final episode of season 1 of Farscape. Ooh. It took us a little over a year, but we have got through it despite, you know, despite finals hell and COVID and
crappy kidneys else. And yeah.
Yeah, we have made it 1 year. So, well, we will in 2 weeks, and then we'll have to
another year.
We have three more seasons to make. So thank you for joining us on this.
Thank you.
This year.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.
Bye, friends. And welcome to Muppet Sex and Trauma. I'm Sarah. I can't say my own name.
Did you just mispronounce your own name?
Apparently. Did you just say Sarah?
No, but I started to. That's weird. Too many weird names in this.
Sarah Ezit.
Can we keep this in?
It's Sarah Ezit. It's Jacques Crom.
Jacques Crom.
It's a Crom.
Georges Gostin.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, there is our outtake. let's try this again. Okay.
We get to the damn intros.
The crew of Moya are hiding in an astral field.
an astrophy.
An astrophy is what I heard.
I think that was astrofield, but yours is funnier. You can tell we're all sleep deprived if you found it that funny.
A Bernie Mac, that is great!
I thought that was about the level of Bon Appetit, which oh, listeners, we are all a little sleep deprived today.
Got him. The blooper reel is just going to be Jack wailing and then me wheezing.
I can't breathe.
Like just kind of laughter together.
I thought you were making me laugh uncontrollably.
As you mispronounce your own name.
Can you pull yourself together, sweetie?
No.
I'm good.
No, so you better let it all out. You gotta let it all out. There you go. There you go.
Okay, I'm okay.
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 It really wasn't that funny.
It never was.
Art is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly. Okay, don't tell me it wasn't funny.
I'm not sure it was great. Stop communicating for like.
Clearly, it was.
that was the best pun I've heard in such a long time. I loved it.